Undercurrents, the hidden knowledge of groundwater. A production of the University of Wisconsin Water Resources Institute. Hello, hello, hello. This is Dr. Chris once again, and we are back. In this episode, we are going to discover the who and the how of modern groundwater investigation. And as I promised, I found some hydrogeologists to help explain this. I actually found them twice, once at their underground headquarters at a heavily guarded compound in Madison, and once again out in the wilds of Wisconsin as they drilled down with mighty machines to wrest groundwater knowledge from the earth. Using the power of audio, we'll be able to move at will from the field to the lab and back as these hydrogeological gurus reveal more about the ground component of this groundwater challenge and the methods they use to unlock groundwater mysteries. And okay, yeah, I sort of exaggerated a bit. They don't really work in some secret bunker. It's a regular building on Mineral Point Road. If you're in Madison, you can go, and you should go because it's fun, and they have loads of super swell rocks. They're surprisingly knowledgeable about all their holdings, too. So much so that you are going to see why I now refer to this place as the Library of Rock. Oh yeah, we are live and we are at the Wisconsin Geological and Natural History Survey. I'm here with a whole crew of people today, and I'm going to have them introduce themselves.
My name is Jay Zambito. I'm a geologist at the Wisconsin Geological Survey.
I'm Lisa Haas, and I am an undergraduate studying geoscience.
I'm Mike Parson. I'm a hydrogeologist here at the Wisconsin Geological and Natural History Survey.
Our job is to provide unbiased scientific information so that Wisconsinites, businesses, government, they can make informed decisions about their natural resources.
How do you find out about water underground? How do you locate it? How do you determine where these different aquifers are?
We're looking into the groundwater system through wells, which are viewpoints into the subsurface.
Have you drilled wells yourself?
A lot of what we do in the summer is drilling wells. We have a core sample next to us here, which is actually recovered from a well that was drilled. We were able to recover subsurface materials, rocks, from the ground and brought those to the surface and are able to study them here in our laboratories.
I'm going to describe these. They are thin cores, about 2.5 inches wide, and they appear to be, these are rocks. Can you describe what I'm holding? It's white. It looks like sandstone or limestone.
Mm-hmm. So your first guess was correct. That's a sandstone. Mm-hmm. So it's a stone that's made up of sand grains, and the majority of those sand grains are the mineral quartz.
And it is cylindrical. There must be a row of about 20 to 30 boxes of these cores. They're about 2.5 feet long. Can you maybe explain what I'm looking at?
A rock core. This is something that we collect with our drill rig during the summer.
You can see Lisa over on one side. She's hosing off the different cores, cleaning them up.
We do a lot of coring as part of mapping projects or to monitor groundwater, not only quantity, but groundwater quality.
Drilling core to liberate that column of rock from the surrounding rock, you have to grind away the material that's surrounding it. And so the drill bit, you can see it's hollow, like a straw. And around the edge, these are diamonds that are embedded in the metal of the drill bit. And you also see at the tip, there's these channels that are cut. And those channels are to allow water to flow. If you think about how this looks in the ground, this drill bit is on the end of a long stem of steel drill rod. So we're pumping drilling mud, it's the clay mineral bentonite, through that drill rod all the way down to where we're grinding away the rock. And this drill bit is grinding away the rock slowly, and the mud that's coming down is keeping everything cool because it's a lot of heat that's being generated. But the mud is also taking away those ground up bits of rock through those channels, and that's then coming up along the outside of the drill rod. In addition to keeping it cool, we've got to get that powder rock out of the way to keep things nice and clean. And so as we're grinding away the rock that's surrounding the column that we're creating, that core comes up into the drill rod, and that inner barrel is where the core is collected. We do 10-foot runs at a time. When we get down to the bottom of that 10-foot section, we send a tool down on a wire and it grabs that inner barrel and brings it back up the drill rod. And so that way we don't have to pull out 15 10-foot segments of drill rod to get the core at the bottom. We can just use the wire to pull it up and then send that tool back down that inner barrel for the next run. So that's the wireline tool grabbing onto the inner barrel. And now we're gonna bring that back up to the surface.
We bring that rock up to the surface, the core, clean it off, box it up, and we mark the depth at which it came from.
So this one's going to be neat. Can you describe what you're about to do, Bill?
Yeah, this has to lock into the outer core barrel that's down at the bottom of the drill rod. We can just drop it and let it free fall through the drilling mud that's inside the drill rod, and it'll take a minute or so. There's a little bit of tape. Now we turn off the engine and listen for it to click into place.
So it's sliding down the pipe right now.
It is.
Who am I speaking with?
My name is Bill Batten. I've been with the Wisconsin Geological Survey for about 20 years. I typically work with geology and groundwater projects.
The inner barrel is locked in place, sitting right above that drill bit. And so now when we drill that next run, the core is going to get into the new inner barrel.
We can go back months to years later, depending as new needs come up within the state of Wisconsin for geological information, and we can analyze that core material.
The beauty about drilling and geology in the hot sun, in the middle of a quarry, you never know what to expect if we can get a full recovery. Maybe we'll just get a half foot back. It depends, and that's what keeps it exciting. But you never know if it's this run or the next run, and the type of lithology that is presented.
So that's one of the draws of hydrogeology. You really have to get out there and do it. You can't just sit in a lab.
Rocks don't come to you. You have to go to the rocks.
You get your hands dirty.
Definitely, and that's one of the best parts.
Though you do look glamorous with the mirror shades and the hard hat.
Oh, yes.
What does this tell you? What can you learn from these cores?
So this core here was drilled for a mapping project, but since then, a need came up to better understand potential sources of natural groundwater contamination in the state of Wisconsin. So we're now analyzing the elemental geochemistry of the different rocks. From there, we're going to create a database of what types of trace metals and other types of elements that might be potential health hazards are present in the state and what is their abundance to better predict where water quality issues may occur.
You've been studying naturally occurring contaminants. Explain.
Rocks around the world are very diverse. There's a lot of different minerals that can be found in Earth's surface and below the surface. Those different minerals have different compositions and they have different reactivities.
Just to be clear, reactivity in this scientific situation refers to the tendency of a substance to undergo chemical reaction when exposed to other substances. Take it away, Jay.
So some minerals are very stable. At Earth's surface, they're not going to break down. Quartz is one example of that. That's a very stable mineral. Other minerals, in particular sulfide minerals, those are easily oxidized. So in the presence of oxygen, those minerals start to break down and different elements then can be released into the water. We're looking for the presence of minerals like sulfides that are highly reactive. And depending on where they are in Earth's surface or below the surface, they could be potential groundwater quality problems. Not always. There has to be the right conditions occurring that are going to oxidize those minerals. But the first step is to really know where potential problems could exist. And then from there, start investigating. The most important thing is if these minerals are oxidized or they're reduced. Right. So if they're in reduced forms, meaning that they were formed in the absence of oxygen, and then you introduce a bunch of oxygen around those minerals, then they're going to start breaking down. A good example of that would be the mineral pyrite. A lot of people know that as fool's gold.
Look. Look at the glitter. It's yellow, too, like gold.
It's an iron sulfide mineral. Well, iron, when there's no oxygen present and sulfur is present, iron will bond with that sulfur. form the mineral pyrite. However, if oxygen is present, the iron is much more stable and would rather be attached to that oxygen. And so the iron breaks its bond with the sulfur. It bonds with oxygen and forms minerals like hematite, it's an iron oxide. But then the sulfur becomes liberated. And not only does the sulfur become liberated, but other trace metals that might be present. And a good example of that would be arsenic. Arsenic is found in parts of Wisconsin, particularly in the Northeast. And as pyrite there is oxidized, the arsenic becomes liberated into the groundwater.
Why are sulfides and arsenic, why are those problems?
Like anything, too much is probably a bad thing, right? It goes for arsenic and holiday cookies.
But not David Bowie. Oh,
yeah. But not David Bowie. But yeah, different elements are potential health hazards in abundance. We're working to characterize the presence and abundance of these elements so then we can better predict where they might be a health hazard.
So what have you guys learned?
Understanding which types of rock we would like to look at, we have various forms. One is the core, and then another form of rock that we're able to analyze are
the cuttings from the sandstone that we're drilling through will actually get incorporated into that mud and get lifted up and out of the hole, which is necessary to keep drilling.
Those rocks are collected, and then you're able to have bits of rock to represent the geologic units that the driller did indeed go through. There's some over.
These guys have the best rock collections ever. These are cuttings?
Yep.
Okay, so these are just the debris from the actual work of drilling that you collect and save. This is in a spice container. You can hear it, it shakes. There's a whole selection. Don't use these for cooking, kids.
So this cutting set was drilled by Prairie du Chien 80 years ago. These are old samples. Another part of our mission here at the Geological Survey is to keep track of the library of the state's geologic history and inventory. This is just one of many cutting sets we have from when wells are installed. And each one of these jars here, that's what came up from the well as the drillers were going down in a particular 5-foot increment. We've been holding onto these for 80 years, and as new needs arise, we go to our sample inventory and we see what materials we have and we can answer new questions.
Okay, you heard it. They have a library of rock.
The survey is as old as the state, and that's the case for most state geological surveys. And that's because as a state or a territory is being founded, in order to understand the state's economic resources, somebody has to go out and take an inventory of them. We're different than the United States Geological Survey. That's the federal entity. They're looking at nationwide issues, whereas we're here really focusing on the state of Wisconsin and the needs of Wisconsinites.
When did the state get started? 1848?
The state was founded in 1848.
Nailed it. So these resources have been important since the state was founded. Do you guys get a sense of history when you do your work?
Very much so. I mean, every day we work on different geologic components of the state's history. Keep in mind, is these rocks that we're looking at here are hundreds of millions of years old. So we're actually traveling way back in time to look at what's happening, not just 80 years ago or in 1848, but about 450 to 500 million years ago.
Okay, so you're looking at the rocks, but you're a hydrogeologist. Tell me about groundwater.
Groundwater is interacting with these rocks. So hundreds of millions of years ago, what was happening in these rocks is a little bit of a mystery, and we're trying to piece together that history. But today, in 2016, we're trying to understand how is groundwater interacting with these rocks, and how may some of the minerals that are contained in these rocks become mobilized within the groundwater system.
So you're doing foundational work. I'm here right at the beginning, the bedrock of the study.
You are.
So to say.
There's a town I know where the hipsters go called Bedrock. Twitch, twitch, when you get an itch, then you do the twitch.
Sometimes you have to break rocks. So we could break a rock for you if you want to catch that on.
Yes, on the, absolutely. Right. I want to smash rocks. This is our job. Now he's got the geologist's hammer. He's got a nice heavy piece of iron so he doesn't mess up the floor.
That's my favorite part of the job.
Get to take out a lot of frustration on rocks. That one broke up pretty easily. And yes, these people do have safety goggles and safety masks. These are trained scientists. Don't try this at home. Though it really looks like fun.
Okay, so you're doing data analysis. What does this entail?
I am. It entails using an XRF. It's an X-ray fluorescence device.
This is a box about...
It's a lead-protected box. You have a lead glass in the front and lead tabs on the side. And below this little instrument looks like a gun and I guess functions similarly, where it will shoot an X-ray into a sample that you'll put into this lead-protected box.
It's about a cubic foot, and the front of it's clear, so you can actually look inside it.
There's a small opening where you would actually place your core cuttings, or we even have hand sample collected from the field.
Can we do this?
Oh, we sure can.
Yay.
Definitely.
Yeah, on all the other sides of this box, there is lead shielding.
We're going to be completely protected from these X-rays. The dose is less than you would receive by taking a normal airplane flight if you were exposed.
Okay, well, I hate flying, but okay. That's all right.
All right, so here's a sample we collected in the field. This is from a unit called the Tunnel City. The Tunnel City is named for Tunnel City, Wisconsin. That's where the rocks of this particular type were first described. When geologists name a rock unit, they name it after the place where it's best exposed. So you can see it's very green.
It's thin, about an inch thick. Could be an old axe head or something like that. Thin axe head.
It could.
But it's not.
It's not, no. This rock we collected from an outcrop near La Crosse, and you did notice the fine laminations, and that's related to water that was flowing, a current essentially, on the seafloor when this rock was deposited. And then you can also notice these features like that about the width of a pencil. Oh, those are burrows from worms that were living there.
So we're looking at a snapshot of the seabed.
That's right, yep. This was a pile of sediment that was deposited probably during the waning phase of a storm. And then after the storm finished and things quieted down, animals came and started burrowing looking for food. So.
And this is going to make a sound?
Mm-hmm. As the X-ray is bombarding the sample, there are different filters that pick up different elements. So as the filters change, you'll hear a little switch on the XRF. And then after the XRF is done sampling, it will make several beeps to let you know that it's safe to open the lead tabs.
I'm going to mic it up. Here we go. They have it connected to a computer.
You can see on the screen there's a little viewfinder, so we can see the sample as it's on the handheld XRF analyzer. What this machine is doing is it's bombarding the sample with X-rays, and when that happens, electrons within the atomic shell, they start moving around, and they're giving off energy. That energy, as it's released, the X-ray fluorescence analyzer is analyzing that energy, and it can figure out what elements are present and their abundance.
It has a readout with the different elemental names that it's seeing.
This particular sample, we see about 6% of the rock is made of iron, 4.5% is made of potassium, probably in clay minerals. The iron is probably in the mineral glauconite, that's the green mineral you saw, that really defines the Tunnel City rock unit. The majority of it looks to be silicon. It's coming in at about 35%, and that's because there's a lot of sand grains made in the mineral quartz.
That is an amazing tool.
In this case, not only are we characterizing the major rock components, but we're also looking for trace metals that might be present. So we are getting about 960 parts per million. Sulfur, looks like there's other things like...
Zinc?
Mm-hmm. There's some zinc present, a little bit of lead, but these are pretty small amounts, and arsenic as well. But these are very low amounts and probably would not be anything to be concerned about in this particular rock.
Are there problem areas in Wisconsin for trace minerals like this that you've located so far or that you knew about already?
There are different rock units based on their composition and where they occur in the subsurface over by Green Bay. There's a unit called the St. Peter, and there's pyrite near the top of the St. Peter sandstone. And if that pyrite becomes oxidized, it's known to be high in arsenic. And so arsenic is a common problem up there. And one way around that then is when you're drilling your well, you just case through that interval, and then you're not drawing water from those particular rocks where there's a high level of arsenic. Most of the problems that we've encountered, and really DNR turned us onto this, where they were seeing problems was in the area of La Crosse. The project started there, and we've been branching out as part of building this database that covers about a third of the state for this particular rock unit.
So there's really some direct benefits from your work. People who are drilling for wells, perhaps on their own property, or for a larger development, they don't want to drill into arsenic,
which would essentially be what they would do if they dropped the well at the wrong depth. That's pretty cool.
Correct. And there's a number of other factors, though, too. So even if a particular trace metal is present, depending on where the water table is, that mineral with that potential health hazard trace element that's present, if there's no oxygen being introduced, chances are the mineral is not going to weather, it's not going to oxidize, and none of those trace metals are going to get into the water. So it's a combination of what trace metals are present in the rock and where are they really relative to the water table. And you're right, this does potentially save homeowners a lot of money. So once we compile this database and we have a good understanding of the rock's composition, we'll be able to answer questions from the public when they're putting in a well and letting them know, well, you should drill down an extra 50 feet. You know, it's a little more expensive now, but down the road, it saves you $50,000 when you have to redo your whole well. Those kind of things are typically the kind of questions we try to answer here at the Wisconsin Survey.
On behalf of the people of Wisconsin, thanks. That sounds awesome.
We have a conceptual model, and that model is a series of hypotheses. And as we collect new data, we can test those hypotheses and then refine them until we get them to a point where that conceptual model, those hypotheses, are explaining the majority of observations that we find.
Have you found anything that is not easily explained yet?
Every day I see something that blows my mind, new questions arise, and that's what keeps this interesting. People should always feel free to contact us. We're here to provide unbiased scientific information so that people can make informed decisions about using our state's groundwater.
And they have the Library of Rock here. Any last words, Lisa?
I guess one thing that has been really interesting about this is just the diversity of rocks. I had no idea starting out as a student what exactly is beneath us. There is so much that we don't know, and it's really been a blast helping out and working to really understand what we are standing on.
It really is a library because you can read the stories. That's so impressive.
It really is the Wisconsin idea brought to life in many ways, and look forward to working with people from across the state and seeing this data applied.
So say we all.
So say we all.
All right, I'm going to have to let these guys get back to their work. Bring yourself down to the Wisconsin Geological and Natural History Survey sometime and check out the rock. All right. Well, now that you know a bit more about modern geologists, who they are and what they do, and hopefully you've come away with the rather important idea that the ground itself can and will affect groundwater, we're going to have to move on to some more serious issues. Before we do that, I should let you know that these folks have a website, and who doesn't, where you can get free downloads of publications and all that, but again, if you can, you really should visit your state's Geological Survey if you get the chance. They've got maps and rocks and swag and rocks, and hey, I even nabbed some really swank geology postcards. And look, if you are starting to think that digging holes, shooting x-rays, busting rocks, and learning to read stories from stone just might be the right job for you, there's another podcast coming up where you can find out how you too can become a hydrogeologist. Right now though, I've got to hit the road. I've found out about a very unusual case of groundwater contamination, and this is affecting friends of mine out in Colorado. It's gonna take me a couple of days to drive there, so you've got a bit to freshen up. But do come back. I think that this next story will confirm why you should care about groundwater, and why groundwater has become so important for so many people. Until next time, this is Dr. Chris. I gotta find my keys. Where are they?
I left them here somewhere.
This has been a production of the University of Wisconsin Water Resources Institute. Thanks for listening.